Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're going to do a show which is going to go much deeper into and in many ways hopefully be a better explanation of how life is developed in the energy kingdom. Now, I've covered this topic. I covered it several months ago, but some people are a bit confused. There's a couple of groups or larger, we'll call them ageless wisdom kind of groups, who teach things that are based either on incomplete circumstances or in some cases, in my opinion, are incorrect. But regardless of the fact that they teach it that way, the main factor for tonight's show is to have as complete an understanding as I can do in teaching it so that people can figure out for themselves what makes most sense to them and how does it all fit together. That's pretty much it's called the law of correspondences, and it's pretty much the best way to understand something as deep and, we'll call it, sometimes misunderstood as the life in the energy kingdom. Now, let's begin with the idea that life is the growth of our creator, and therefore there is a kingdom called the energy kingdom, which most people either do have some understanding of or none at all, and this kingdom is an integral part of creating life, but in itself, it contains life. This confuses people. Because we live in a very big illusionary state where we are right now, which is the smallest part of the whole universe that we call the cosmic physical universe, this part, sub-part of that big, giant universe is where most people think everything exists. Science believes that this is the whole banana, so to speak. And it's really not. It's just a fraction of the life that exists. And it is the most difficult place to grow, for life to grow itself and to become part of its creator. The reason for that, we're going to get into in understanding the development of life in the energy kingdom. And this is all related to that. So, thinking of it from that standpoint, that life is our creator's growth, and it has chosen a method of allowing life to create itself so that life is not some kind of puppet show, which would be ridiculous, because why have life at all if it's just an extension of one's own choices and not the choices of the life? It would be relatively boring and not make much sense. So from that standpoint, beginning there, then the next step is to look at, well, okay, we have seven dimensions of time and space, although time and space are, we'll call it, integrated at such a high level in the first two major dimensions in the whole universe. It's even difficult for us to comprehend what that means because and there really isn't the kind of separation that we think of as being time and or space. So that's the first quality that throws people off in trying to understand energy. Energy is really the third part of the creator or God's mind. Now, what do I mean by mind? Mind is the part of our creator that is the creator of this universe. Does that mean that there isn't some part of God that exists separate from or in a different way from this universe? Yes, there actually is a different part, but it is the mind of God in its entirety that creates this universe. And this gets a little complicated, but think of it this way. The creator of this universe is really like a fledgling god. It's a little hard to understand that, too. Fledgling god in the sense that it only has three elements, which we call its mind, that created this universe. There are greater more advanced kinds of universes, which the God of this universe might eventually create for itself, that lies even in a more complicated and more, we'll say, there are three parts to the God of this universe, and those three parts are choices, consciousness, and we'll call it interactions that in our realm we would call energy. And so it's these three parts that interact together and that have, we'll say, the foundation of life everywhere that life exists in the universe. There are a few kind of weird exceptions even to that, but we'll get into that. So I'm going to kind of just, because we lost a little bit of time here, I'm going to try to, we'll say, catch up if possible. All right, so the nature of understanding the energy kingdom beyond where we presently do has the necessity to recognize that the first part, the very first part of God's mind is choices, and choices take precedent over the second part of God's mind, which is consciousness. So even though the two together create God's thought, which also represents what we call enlightenment or light, the foundation of light is really weighted a little bit more towards choices than it is towards consciousness. Now, that's a little bit strange. A lot of people think that two should be equal, and they aren't exactly equal because it's more important to have, we'll call it, choices, even if you're lacking some level of understanding, in other words, freedom to choose, than it is to have a lot of understanding but will be lacking in the ability or freedom to choose. Because then creation itself is stifled. And understanding one's lack of creation only leads to usually some form of eventual loss of understanding and suffering. Whereas if a person has, or a life form has, enough freedom, eventually more understanding will develop. So that's the reason it's weighted that way. And a lot of people don't know that, but maybe you all do now with that very brief explanation of a subject that is complicated and could take a whole show just to explain. All right, so let's move on to the rest of what we're dealing with tonight, which is that within our universe, within the universe itself, there is the expression of God's mind first in the level of, we'll call it, a completed but not creative way of being alive. Completed just means that for those parts of life that have advanced the most they can in this universe, they're in a state of, we'll call it, finishing the experience of being God in this universe, but no longer in a role of interactively evolving themselves in the process. And then, in addition, there are beings, literally there's a name for them, called the One or the Monads, who actually come from a much higher universe. This sounds so amazing. They are extensions or parts of beings that exist in a universe two levels higher than this low level of universe that we exist in. It's the lowest you could be in, actually. It's the basement. The basement of universes, and we're in the basement of that universe. You don't get any lower. And so this is the interesting part of this idea, is that part of life is dependent in our universe of beings coming from a higher universe making a unique choice in their creation of life, in that they will not be doing the interacting they give up. They choose to disqualify themselves from interacting in life so that a vast amount more life can be created in dimensions of time and space below them and at a much accelerated rate than if they were to choose to interact. Life diversifies much greater because of their sacrifices. And they literally choose to not deal with the intelligent activity or what we might call energy. And they separate it from themselves so it can be used in other kinds of life in the dimensions of time and space below their dimension. Their dimension is actually called the monadic dimension. And the highest dimension is called the logoic dimension, referring to God itself. And so beings that exist outside of God in the logoic dimension are godlike, and they are ascended monads who have gone through an amazing array of creation of life for eons of time, and then have experienced all this, and in the process are getting ready to go to a higher universe to exist in. But they originally came from a higher universe, but they came to this universe to experience the uniqueness of a lower universe that is still creative, different than the one they originally came from. It's fascinating that they actually choose to do that. And so the monads really play a very important part, because without them there would be much less diversity of life, and that would not be what God's intention is. Diversity allows higher levels of that creativity, which is part of the first part of God's mind, and makes light so much more effective in its process. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. All right, so we look at how this thing works, and this intelligent activity that's in the monadic realm is got to go somewhere. It's not going to stay there. So the monads literally release it to, we'll say, on a specific plan that they have, to enter into the lower dimensions of the universe. And the first thing that this energy does is it goes into the atmic, or the third plane, sometimes called the spiritual plane, of our universe. And when it gets there, it starts to do one of two things. It either connects itself interactively with other energy that is in two lower realms than the one it's in. So it's in the spiritual development phase, spiritual realm. That's the atmic plane. And it some of it drops into the buddhic or intuitional plane, and the remainder goes into the higher part, sometimes referred to as the higher monastic or mental plane. Those three parts actually become beings. And this is important. This is a big deal. This is where people get confused. Those beings are called solar. That means solar, the word solar refers to development of self. So we'll call it highly developed or big self developed angels, solar angels. Okay, so those are angelic beings that are composed of, dominated by energy, but they retain and have still a high amount of creativity, because their self, they have maintained a full and highly developed self, a higher self, we call it. Their self is fully, well, not fully, fully, but it's very largely developed. And they also have a relatively high level of consciousness, because in those realms that we're talking about, where humans don't really think, it's too far beyond most human beings, these beings have amazing consciousness. Now, they start off at the very beginning of this process. They start off where most of the creation that they are doing involves the lowest part, the lowest part. This is hard to understand for some people. The lowest part of their quote-unquote body. Their body is called the spiritual triad of advanced energies. Okay? And this lowest part of their body is the focus of where they originally create the most from. And the monads have one of three kinds of focuses. One of three kinds. They're either focused mostly on the first part of God's mind, mostly on the second part, or mostly on the third part. So they're sometimes referred to as ray focuses of one, two, or three. But the true part, the way to describe it, is they're more focused on one part of God's mind than another. That's just their choice, their nature to do so. The strange thing about the beginning of solar angels is that they are more diverse. Remember I told you that this whole idea is diversity, right? Instead of being focused on just one, two, or three, the three parts of God's mind, they are focused on one of seven types of energy expression because they also are focused to some extent on how life may develop in one of the seven ways that energy could express itself, not just the three parts of God's mind, but the four remaining parts that are not parts of God's mind, but they are still parts of interaction. And so each solar angel chooses, and it's a hard thing for us to get the choice idea, but they actually do choose where they're going to express themselves in life the most. Now, these beginning solar angels, they're beginning ones. They express themselves more in the middle world than any place else, and their self is more developed there. It's far more developed in the higher middle world than it is in the intuitional, which some people refer to as the Buddhic plane, or the Atmic. Some people refer to that as a spiritual plane. The reason for that is they haven't created enough life to balance their consciousness with their creation and enlighten themselves enough. And they have a unique, we'll call it, connection to a certain kind of soul. They fulfill a good deal, but not all, of the higher mental functionings of new souls that are called group souls. Now, what's a group soul? Well, the energies in a group soul are less developed than the energies in an individual soul, like a human might have, and they tend to be very narrow in the way that they create, usually very significantly along one of the different seven kinds of ways of life expression. And some of these souls actually don't even express themselves initially as anything that we would call life. It's more pre-life. It's like chemistry. It's like the elements and minerals and stuff. Then they go on to express themselves through lower forms of life, including some, you know, we'll call them single-celled organisms and that sort of thing, even some aberrant forms of life, including viruses and bacteria. They're usually crossed between different kinds of life. But regardless, when we look at this, these group souls are the foundation of the beginnings of life, but without the help of the energy kingdom, the solar angel, they would fail. Now, why would they fail? Because they just don't think well enough in the higher mental world to sustain the life that is complicated and has to prepare itself for all kinds of harsh conditions that it is only vaguely familiar with or unfamiliar with. And a solar angel has a greater familiarity only from its consciousness of the problems, and so it has better answers. Life, therefore, becomes more abundant and more prosperous in its ability to stay alive. It's a great system because you have the angelic part of the energy kingdom working with lower forms of energy that have fallen considerably below the higher mental world. In the higher mental world, the energies they work with the most are the energies of the group soul. But the group soul is working with energies in the lower mental world and the astral world and a large amount in the physical or etheric physical part of the universe, the basement where we are right now, right? And so all of this is going on. And these two parts, we'll call them, of the energy kingdom are working together. There's really three, but we'll call it two for right now. So you've got the kind that is lower from in dimensional space from the solar part, the solar angel part. And then you have two different kinds of energies. You have energies that are involuting, meaning that they are losing consciousness, while they tend to gravitate towards each other. And they don't have much, if any, creative element to them. And they tend to stick together, basically. They produce gravity. In addition, some of these very involutionary energies eventually become evolutionary over time. And they, that's when they get out of the mineral kingdom and start to develop life outside of that. And so when that takes place, they become a little bit evolutionary, but they are not called solar. They're called lunar energies, and they're called devonic still because they are willing to do something more than to gravitate with each other. They are willing to follow, to some extent, the thought of the group soul and the thought of the assisting solar angel of the lowest kind, which is working with group souls. So if you're following everything I'm saying, and I know this is very complicated, that's the reason it's not so easy to make a show like this, because, after all, look at the vastness of what I'm talking about just in a short time. But so if you look at this from the standpoint of a newly formed solar angel, it has its preponderance of its life is centered in the development of a greater self in the group soul, so that the group soul can help a whole bunch of, we'll say, collection of similar life, usually a species or subspecies of life, to become more prosperous and grow and be able to deal with adaptability and change, because the world is a difficult place in many respects. There's a lot of forces. All right, so this is going on, and during this time, the beginning solar angels are doing what they can to ensure that life will become more abundant and eventually become more conscious. The solar angels in this group, this first group, can spend a very long time doing what I'm talking about. And again, they've chosen usually a ray focus. Sometimes the ray focus can change, but most of the time it sticks. And they'll change. Start with a ray focus of minerals, and a ray focus eventually of plants, and a ray focus of animals. That's specific to their choice. Again, it can change, and it changes more often if and when they might leave a planet and go to a different planet. It could change, but this is an option they have. So they're trying to develop, we'll call it, a very specialized consciousness along a specific ray or energy type that evolves all kinds of life in different kingdoms. And they do this to assist not only the development of that particular kingdom that they're working with at the time, but also of the energy that's part of their own kingdom. They are in the energy kingdom. This other life is in either the mineral, plant, or animal kingdom, or between those kingdoms, if it's a parasite or some other kind of life form that does that sort of thing. So when we examine the whole process, it starts to make a bit of sense, because this is how life is able to be diverse in a huge way. If this system wasn't like this, you'd end up with a lot less diversity and a confusion, to say the least, in how life is supposed to get there. Now, there are systems that people believe in that follow a different ideology than what I just explained. They're not evolutionary. They don't look at it from a creative standpoint, and they don't try to prove anything that I'm talking about in terms of what I think is a true way of looking at it. Instead, they rely upon some statements from books that are misunderstood. Because solar angels are created in two different ways. Initially, they're created through their own thinking about what ray they're going to be focused in. And that certainly is a choice they make, and there's no question that there's a whole group based upon these different focuses. But the greater issue is how each solar angel develops itself in a creative way. And as we go through the most of the show tonight, we'll see how this really is a big deal, because eventually the solar angel is evolving through three different parts of itself, while all of life is advancing and becoming much more conscious. And most of this is focused on a planet, but some solar angels leave a planet and go to other planets, depending upon the circumstances. When they leave, they usually are switching from one focus of self to another. Remember, the focus of self for the beginning solar angels is in the higher mental world, but for the next stage, it's in the Buddhic world, where their self is focused. And where a being's self is focused is where its consciousness is focused. That's the same thing. And it's where it's also going to be most creative. Consciousness and creativity is its spiritual development. So we can see that this is a real big picture kind of way of examining the whole thing. Okay, I realize that some of this is fast, and some of this is, you know, people say, well, I have to hear that four times before I get it. Well, you can do that. You see, this show will be up in the not-too-distant future on the Internet, and people can listen to it several times if they need to follow this whole complicated but very interesting system of the development of life in the Energy Kingdom. All right, so we have life in the Energy Kingdom going really radically in different directions. Part of it stays at this very high level where it has a individual self right from the beginning of its existence. We call that the solar angels. And then part of it involutes and becomes completely non-self, has no self. Okay, and all it wants to do is gravitate, get together with other energy and hang out, whatever that's about. And then in between the two, there is a devonic development, which means that devonic means there's some development of consciousness outside of the consciousness of gravity itself. And some of that consciousness eventually becomes solar, which means it has a self. Some of it is lunar, which means it lacks a self. Lunar means, in our world particularly, anything below the higher mental world, and solar would be anything from the higher mental world and up. So if a devonic energy is part of the higher mental world, it has some level, even very small, it might have a very small level, but of self-development. That means it is conscious of who and what it is. But if it's below that level, if it's a lunar devonic energy, it doesn't have that. Even if it's in the mental world, it doesn't have any consciousness or understanding of who or what it is in relationship to who or what something else is. That's a big deal, because the development of self, it gets the energy much closer to its creator, to God. And the solar angel is continually trying to get devonic energies to become more and more solar, more and more self-conscious. Sometimes it doesn't succeed in that, but it does what it can. And it does this by assisting the energies to think better. It does this by getting the devonic energies to cooperate with its own plans of creation. And when they choose to do that, just like we choose to co-create with our creator, they develop a greater self, just like we do. When we choose to co-create with God, we develop a greater self. So there's a correspondence between all of these parts of life. They all are functioning in the same ways, but unique to their parts of the universe and their kingdom. I try to present this scenario so that people kind of get the idea that there is a commonality to life development, and that we can understand the energy kingdom by understanding ourselves, literally. And that helps. When I present it this way, some people get upset because they've read or heard that the energy kingdom, the solar angels, are special beings with special powers and have a unique kind of totally different life. And yet I harp on all that's similar. Well, it's a little bit true on both sides, but the way I'm trying to teach it is so that people can understand it better, because I believe that there is an interconnectivity on how life is created in all parts of the universe. And that ability to see that interconnection tremendously raises consciousness, whereas if you segregate away from that with a bunch of stories and fantasies and some misperceptions, you lose consciousness, you don't gain it, and people get confused. So I think that's what my goal is. That doesn't mean I'm right about it, but we'll see. Okay, so we've got this now. We've got this paradigm, we'll call it. And, oh, by the way, we're good. They already played the commercials, so I'm just going to keep going for a while. You know, we'll take a break in a little while, but longer. But for right now, let's just keep going, because you guys heard all the commercials. It's good enough, you know. And so let's continue. Eventually, after a solar angel that is, we'll quote, the first kind, the first type of development, that's the kind that has its focus in itself, mostly in the mental world. After it has done this for a huge range of life forms, along usually a singular ray focus, although it could be singular for one kingdom and maybe change for another, there are options, we can say. But in either case, that's just normal mode of operation. After it does it, it can, and it chooses to do this, advance to become an assistant, instead of to a group soul, to an individual soul, and individual souls in soul human beings. They are the progenitors of the incarnates we call us, human beings. So the those solar angels, when they choose to, connect with a human soul, but instead of being along one ray focus, like they did with minerals, plants, and animals for who knows how long, they now choose, and this is a little different, to use all seven ways of expressing their energies and their assistance by developing a much larger self in the intuitional or Buddhic world, and sacrificing their mental self. The mental self that they use for all the group souls that they were working with, now they give it up and they say, here is my higher self in the mental world, and it's strictly for the use in the beginning of the human soul and the human incarnates that eventually, if they choose to, co-create with this higher self. It's for their use as well. But at that time, we said the human being is becoming its soul, so it's still for the soul, it's for the human soul's use. And it actually sacrifices its higher mental self, the very self it was using most of the time, for its work with group souls. All right? Does that make sense to you? I hope it does, because this is telling a story of life that is very crucial to putting the whole picture together. And granted, you may read something different, you may be taught something different by some other people, but ask yourself, does their system make as much sense? Okay. Now, let's continue on. So we have now human, we'll call it, solar angels, that the part of their triad of development is now focused Buddhically. And they have their greatest level of self is in the Buddhic realm, and the part that used to be their greatest level of self is now sacrificed and given to the use of the human soul and eventually advanced, very advanced human incarnates. Interesting, very interesting. What does it mean to use the higher self of a solar angel? Well, this higher self is hugely more conscious than the self of a beginning human soul, and beyond that hugeness, vastly beyond that, as far as any individual incarnate until the last maybe few dozen lifetimes. So it's amazing that that gift is of such magnitude and such sacrifice on the part of the solar angel. It's so great that most human souls, until they get past the first half of all of their lifetimes, virtually can barely use the gift that is given to them. The self of the solar angel in the mental world is so much greater than the consciousness of a beginning human soul, and even a moderately developed human soul, that it's just overwhelming to the human soul. It can't really use the self as much. It's not nearly as creative as it could be, that means, but it is challenged. It is given the opportunity to use it, and so is its incarnates, us, in any lifetime, if we choose to, and if we devote ourselves through spiritual discipline to do so. It's a fascinating idea. And this is all a gift from the now second triadal level solar angel to us. Fascinating. By the way, unlike with the lower life forms, the human solar angel stays with the human in almost all cases. There's a few exceptions like evil people and stuff. Let's not get into that. It stays with the human for all lifetimes, the human soul, so that in each incarnation, the incarnation has a common to its prior incarnations solar angel. Now, there's a great advantage to this, because the self of the solar angel is the bridge between, and literally it's called a bridge, the bridge between the human and its soul in terms of consciousness. It helps for the two to work together. At the very beginning of every incarnated human being's life, there is a conscience that is given through the higher self of the solar angel. Goes through a thing called a vortex, and a stream of both energy and thought is continuously available to the human. That doesn't mean every human avails himself of this, and some just reject it altogether, and others sometimes don't listen. But the point is, it's available. And what does that mean? Instantly, not only can we sense that God exists, but we have some ideas in our sense through the thought of the solar angel of what this existence means in our relationship to other people and things. That's called our conscience. And so we're given that as a gift, just right off the bat, boom. And in order for it to be a true gift and free for us to access, the solar angel has to sacrifice it. So it gives up its higher self in the mental world so that we can do this and so can our soul. It's amazing. Wow. Now let's look at it from the soul side of things. On the soul side, when you look at this from that standpoint, the human soul is originally in a cocoon of energy. It's called a closed lotus state. There's only one petal that's usually open at all. And so it's surrounded by its own solar divinic energies that have almost no connection, almost none, to the solar angel's higher self. And it's only as these divinic solar divas, their solar divinic energies, gradually unfold and reach out and connect with the higher self of the solar angel, it's only when that takes place that a person becomes more complete or whole in their conceptual thinking. And then they can see things like evil, they can understand what God is in a much greater way, they can create vastly new and great whatevers, because it's creation, in their existence. And once they develop, they almost never lose that. So that connection stays forever, even though they're new incarnations. And that's called the Rainbow Bridge. That's connected between the solar devas, which are part of the lotus or cocoon that surrounds the human soul. And as it opens up and connects with the solar angel, the soul is becoming liberated or free to think beyond its own level of self-development. And it can reach into the self-development, first of the self that is given to it freely in the mental world, but eventually it can join with the self of the solar angel in the Buddhic world. Now, what's the difference? Well, in one, it's taking a handout. You could say it's like, you know, sort of like the food stamps of the mental world. It gets some free higher self. As long as it's willing to create some on its own, it gets matching stamps, okay? But it doesn't join. It doesn't join with the solar angel at that level. Interestingly, the group soul does a little bit. When in the first stage of triadal development of a solar angel, the group soul can, but the human soul doesn't. It can't join with the solar angel in the middle world because that self is already being sacrificed by the solar angel. It's not really the solar angel self anymore. It's just, it's available. You get it as you co-create enough to get some supplemental help. But it doesn't join in the consciousness of the solar angel, which is still separate. But as the soul develops some Buddhic consciousness, that's a big deal, by the way, and that really doesn't start to take place until many, many, many lifetimes of incarnations that the soul develops this ability. As it develops some Buddhic self, that Buddhic self joins with, and it's not only just added to, but it joins with the Buddhic self of the solar angel. Now, what does that mean to join with? Well, it's called the cosmic marriage, for some people who might have read books about this. Now, the cosmic marriage is different than, you know, like, you know, it's not having sex together in the Buddhic world, not by our standards anyway. What's happening is it is freely exchanging energies back and forth instead of just in one direction, like, it's self given to it in the mental world. It's just it gets some extra help in thinking whenever it's doing its thinking. But when it goes on to the union with the self in the Buddhic world of the solar angel, the soul, the human soul, starts to liberate itself, and it begins to exchange back and forth. It now is giving to its solar angel, and the solar angel is receiving additional self. This is exponential the way it builds, so the self grows rapidly once it starts to take place. And as that takes place, the human being, its lower self, is becoming one with its higher self. And in the process, it becomes married to the soul as well. It becomes the soul. They become eventually indistinguishable. And the soul becomes connected to, and in some ways indistinguishable, with its solar angel. Even though they both remain as individual beings, they also are sharing their consciousness. Tell me, this isn't pretty amazing stuff. Come on. And that's the life of these great solar beings. Now, what's going on with the other energies? Because we're talking about the whole energy kingdom. Well, I already said that the solar devas, those are the energies that have some level of self and they exist in the higher mental world. Those energies are connecting through a thing called the Rainbow Bridge, or some people call it the Antahkarana. That thing is connecting the mental parts of the soul with the sacrifice self of the solar angel, which is also connecting to each incarnate at a certain level, depending upon how that incarnate chooses to live its life. And the more it chooses to be its soul, the more the connections become balanced and like a triangle of energies. Now, the interesting part about this is that those solar energies, the solar devas, are going to eventually, over time, become able or be enabled to create even new solar angels. This gets into where people get confused. This is why there is so much misunderstanding of this whole process. So we have two different situations here. In some circumstances, some solar divinic energies go from the bottom because they were involutionary. They were just elemental energies, and they eventually became divinic energies, and those divinic energies eventually graduated to become solar divinic energies instead of lunar. And eventually some of them can become part of new solar angels, usually on a different planet, and starting at the beginning stages, not at the human stage. You see how this is getting confusing? So we have two different sources of solar angels. Some came from the original development of energies, and you can see I just went through a whole story how they developed, and some are developed from the energies that were originally involutionary and eventually became evolutionary and divonic, and then they went from lunar divonic to solar divonic, and then from solar divonic, they can join with some energies from the Buddhic realm and from the Atmic realm, the spiritual plane, and create a new triad of energies, usually on a new planet, starting off with lower kingdom-like forms first. So there's two different ways for this to happen, and that's where the confusion lies. You see how this works. It is absolutely necessary that both are used, because if you don't use both methods, you won't ever get, you'll get a bottleneck. You will never get past the development of human beings, and to further the process, you won't get to the second way you can develop solar angels, because you need some solar angels working in the initial stages of how this works. Or another way to look at it is, if the solar angels came from a different planet to begin with, they came from a planet where they already went through the stage of being solar devas, you see. But at the beginning of a star system, the very beginning of a star system, there are no solar devas in that category. They're not developed yet. So you have to go the direction of how I explained it to begin with. Each way is an acceptable explanation. They are not contradictory. Rather, they are supportive of how the whole process works together. Fascinating. Okay. Now, have I lost you? Could be. A lot of stuff here, a lot of different ins and outs. But the main point of this is that this is how life develops in the energy kingdom. It is a kingdom in and of itself, even though it's part of all lower life in the five lower dimensions of time and space. All life requires energy in those dimensions. And the development, the co-development of life in the energy kingdom has to work in tandem with the development of non-energy kingdom life, but it's still part. It's all connected together. And you can't separate them. All right. Wow. So now let's try to put this in perspective, because it's a big perspective. Eventually, we've talked about the first two stages of this triadal development of solar energy, solar beings. Now, the solar angels are a really great, great life forms, and they truly are the basis of what is meant of angels. I know there's all kinds of people and theories of angels, etc., but this is the original development of angels. And it's hard to gain clear understanding of it, because religions have substituted, if they ever had any of this understanding, they have substituted for a personalized review and explanation of angels, making them confused, making most people confused about what they are and what they do. And it's very hard to understand this. Now, some people say, well, do angels, just the solar angels, appear like angels in religions supposedly do? They can appear, and they do usually when people are dying, by the way, but they appear in the person's mental part of them, the mental body. But to the person or people experiencing these angels, they would swear, because more than one person can experience an angel in the mental body at the same time, but they would swear that those angels are right here in the physical world, or if they're living in the astral world, they'll say they're living in the they're in the astral world. They're not. But to the perception, to the senses of a person who doesn't understand their own senses very well and doesn't know any better, they would not realize that. And they would think that these beings appear right there with them. The way they look is whatever helps the person that they're revealing themselves to, if you want to call it that, or being revealed to, helps the person to feel better, to think better, to serve better, to be more creative. All of those things are part of how the solar angel functions. It's pragmatic, is the best way to describe it. It doesn't need to be a certain thing, look a certain way. It only needs to serve, and that's what it looks for. And it's very creative. So its creations are sometimes as infinite as there are people. Each person has a need, sometimes a desire, oftentimes a misunderstanding of how an angel should be. Well, that's how the angel is going to be to that person, if it's going to do what it needs to do to help the person to be creative, overcome fears and anxieties, to express itself in the highest, most virtuous way it can at the time. And that's what it does. So we have, therefore, almost as many expressions of what an angel looks like or acts like as there are people, because it's a very creative expression. I know, somebody can email, okay, but what do they really look like? So I'll try to explain as best as I can, but remember, anything I say is still coming through my filters, so, you know, I'll give you the best I can. Generally speaking, as energy beings, the solar angel's first expression is in terms of, we'll call it light and lacking of light. So the first thing you notice when you see a solar angel is, if you can see it in its native state, if I can be so bold to say that maybe I know something about it, is that they are exuding huge amounts of light. And they have what we would call to be a super aura that radiates in most directions. Now, here's the point. You can tell whether a solar angel has specialized in one particular area or another of energy focus. If it's the first kind of solar angel, you can tell pretty easily because it has the expression of light in a certain color range and a certain, we'll call it, design that is expressed more in one particular ray focus than another. In a human solar angel, this is not necessarily going to be the case. Because just like in the human soul, the human solar angel is adept in expressing all seven of the rays. Then the expression is in what has it been used the most within to co-create with its creator, especially with its human soul. And if the human being has been evolved in advanced incarnates, then you see even more definitive elements of service. Expression. It's true, souls can function along all seven ray expressions as they need to in service. But the ones that they've chosen the most of aren't dominant, and they're dominant, equally dominant in their solar angel. Now, the other part of this gets a little complicated, and I'll try to explain it as best as I can. The human solar angels are working with members of the next kingdom beyond human. And you could say, well, wait a second, I thought they work with a human being, and they got this great attachment for lifetimes and all this other stuff. All that's true. But besides that, they also work with the next kingdom, the fifth kingdom, sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls, the spiritual kingdom. He's part of the spiritual kingdom, because the spiritual kingdom actually has more than just the kingdom of souls. But they work within that. And why? How are they working and what are they doing? Well, they have a Buddhic life and they have somewhat an atmic life or a spiritual plane life. And they are serving to some extent with what we call masters of the ageless wisdom. And why are they doing that? Well, because eventually the human soul will become one of those masters. It will elevate itself from the higher mental world, and it will become more equally connected with its solar angel in a cosmic marriage in the Buddhic world, and to a small or lesser extent in the Atmic world. And so this gradual connection and development means that there is a preparation on the part of the solar angel to develop itself with the fifth kingdom to be of assistance as the human soul gets closer and closer to leaving the mental world, and its incarnates, the last ones, are actually joining with it in connection. So it's all bundling together, and there's still individual consciousness. This is the part that other people may sometimes find difficult. They are still individual in consciousness. They are not separate. They are not separated by force. They are separated by each contributing creation towards their being more of the creator in an independent but at the same time connected way. So there's individual consciousness, there's individual self, and there's group consciousness and group connection because they're joining together. The soul is joining together with the solar angel, and especially the intuitional realm and above, and so is the incarnate joining with the soul, human soul, and it is also connecting with the solar angel. Wow. And all this is going on, if you could imagine this, pretty much at the same time. And eventually, when the human soul becomes liberated, at that point, It becomes much more equal to its solar angel. So now you have an energy being, an angel, that is becoming at one, and it still may be a bit ahead, but it's still at one, with a human soul. Wow. And remember, the human soul isn't going to incarnate any more human beings because It and its human beings have become one, in effect, and it is now an advanced being. So this changes the relationship now of what we consider to be the energy kingdom and the superhuman kingdom. Because remember, a liberated soul is not a human anymore, it's a superhuman. Its last incarnate has literally become fully enlightened as a soul, and the two have melded together as one. Okay, so you have still two individual selves. The self of the solar angel is very advanced, even still more advanced than the liberated or newly liberated human soul. Yet together, when they work together, there is such beauty and such incredible, we'll say, advanced creation that the wonderment of being these beings is far ahead of even a fairly advanced human soul is still segregated or limited by the mental world itself. And that's even with it receiving help from the sacrificed higher self of the solar angel. That, even though it's a sacrifice and it helps, the thing that really advances consciousness is giving, not receiving. Remember that. It's a very important principle. So you receive all this help, but your consciousness barely moves forward. You get to the Buddhic world, and you're giving as much as you're getting, and suddenly your consciousness grows leaps and bounds. You see the difference? And that's why human souls know this after a while, and they seek to become liberated so that they can become more giving. Uh-huh. And of course, this truism is doubly true of human beings. So we as incarnates grow the most when we are giving wisely in comparison to when we're receiving anything. As a matter of fact, the act of receiving without giving at least of equal amounts lowers consciousness and causes us and others to suffer. Think about that, because that's an important element of, we'll say, the teaching. All right. So eventually, we now see a whole new kind of life being developed in the Buddhic world between the liberated soul, the human soul, and the second triadal stage of the angel. They're becoming intimately connected. And another thing that's happening is they're going back to a state that they originated from. Now, what was that state? That was the state of monadic consciousness. But it was monadic consciousness without having created life anywhere below the monadic plane. That's it. It hadn't done virtually any of that. So now it's all coming back, moving quickly towards the very top level of the monadic plane. There's a big jump after the spiritual plane is mastered. Now, how does that happen? Well, after the cosmic marriage reaches a certain point in the Buddhic realm, the two beings, the liberated human soul and the solar angel, move into what is known as the third triadal stage of development, and it is at this point that both of them become advanced members of the spiritual kingdom. No longer considered a kingdom of souls, they're considered a kingdom of spiritual beings, the soul joined with the solar angel, in near equal, we'll say, levels of consciousness and giving, with incredible levels of creation, each creating from a different point of view of God's mind. The human, which became a human soul, and that human soul now as a liberated soul, creates mostly from the standpoint of spirit. It has become a hugely spiritual being. But it is not an omnipotent, all-powerful being, because power comes from the ability to instantly change any part of energy to any other needed part. And the expert at that is none other than the advanced third triadal level solar angel. Now, these two are also closer together than they've ever been. So now they join together in this final array, we'll say, of ways to become an ascended monad. They go through one stage where they get to the top of the monadic plane, and then they ascend from that after a time of doing that before to the logoic plane, the plane of God itself. So what happens before they reach that is that in the spiritual world or in the atmic plane or on the atmic plane, they become able to, we'll say, duet. They can, one creates from the spiritual focus of thought, we'll call it, and the other creates through the spiritual focus of interaction that is perfect. Perfection in interaction with perfection in thought, the three, as they meld together, becomes omnipotence, in the use of energy. All-powerful. A lot of people say, well, isn't that evil? Evil wants power, you know. No, this is the opposite. What it does is it balances the power in any, we'll call it, life system, and of course this would be like here on Earth for our purposes, and it allows the life system to become completely balanced. Now, what is complete balance when you're talking about intelligent activity in comparison to spiritual thought? Well, when the two are perfectly balanced, they actually aren't equal. This is going to be strange. Okay. What happens is there's, in order to reach the perfection that we would call equality, you have to leave the spiritual plane altogether. But in the process of getting there, you go from a 1-in-5 ratio to a 5-in-1, and then eventually the whole thing finds the balance that is right for that particular world at that particular time. And it changes as that world develops because it's committed to the development of life in a particular solar system on a particular planet. I know that I could explain that a lot more, but it would take another hour just to explain that part of it. It's a whole other system of understanding that's needed. But at any rate, so these two parts of life now are joining together in the spiritual world, and are advanced members in the spiritual hierarchy of that world. They're beyond the kingdom of souls because they are not focusing or working as souls anymore. They are working and focusing as we'll call junior members of being godlike. Because omnipotence with omniscience, which is what we're talking about, when put together, leads to a close to a godlike state. That's pretty big. Okay. And so they do some amazing things. They actually are involved in the co-creation of extremely big parts of how a planet develops itself. And there aren't very many of these beings. There could be just a few dozen, like here on Earth, because Earth hasn't developed very many of these beings yet. But these are advanced spiritual beings. And the cosmic marriage pretty much completes itself when they ascend first to the top of the monadic plane. They spend a bit of time there basically going over all of the life developments they had since the beginning of the whole procedure began, and how this is adding to the whole universe. That's what they focus on. When they got that part down, when they realized how it's interconnecting in all the zillions of ways, then they're freed from the top of the monadic plane to go to the logoic plane and to live as what is known as a liberated monad. At that point, the cosmic marriage is complete. And the solar angel of the energy kingdom has become one with the what used to be the liberated soul, or the what we might think of as our future. And the oneness between them still does not eliminate their individual self. It just allows their co-creation to be completely effortless in both omnipotence and omniscience, and one last condition called omnipresence. Now, what's so great about omnipresence? Omnipresence means that as you live out the rest of your life in the logoic world, you live out your life as being a part of God. Your experience is not of the universe any longer, but as God is experiencing in the universe. Whew. So that's, and the energy, now the energy part of existence has fully integrated and become part of the spiritual part. They are no longer separate, yet they each have still individual selves. I know. It's a little difficult for us because we think so limited in what a self is. It's hard for us to conceive of this seeming paradox. Okay. Fascinating issue. Okay. How how does this develop life then everywhere? Well, it's really the culmination. It's the culmination of being your creator, to experience your creator, past, present, and a virtual created future from the point at which each liberated, we'll call it, super being, which we'll call it an angel being, leaves this universe, going to a higher universe, either to the, one of three, in most cases, one of two higher universes is where the human is going to end up, well, the human, the prior human and the angel connected, are going to go off and exist in. Again, this is getting into such, we'll call it esoteric things, hidden parts of existence, that I can only generally describe it because, obviously, I haven't been there. So, you know, that's, frankly, I don't know beings that have been there. In order to know those beings, you would have to be virtually in their position. All right, so the process is unification through a grand scheme of diversification. So there's this huge amount of diversification that the energy kingdom lends to the process of developing life. Huge. Because so many different things are happening to different parts of energy all at the same time. You've got the lunar devas, you got the non-devas, which are elemental energies moving into gravitational positions, and then you've got solar devas, and eventually, you know, they enter into effectively the solar angel kingdom. But at the same time, you have solar angels right from the beginning, starting in the process from the top down. And yet you have all of this going on, adding to tremendous diversity coming from what was originally monads, but not ascended monads. Monads that have no clue about this universe. They came from another universe. They're here like babes in the woods. Let's find out about life and try to create more of it. That's what they say. And they start with a solar system. And they're connected to the being that helped to create that solar system. And there's zillions of solar systems throughout the universe. So it's a huge project, you might say. Yes, monads are pretty much always connected to the same solar system. That's not necessarily true of all solar angels, but it's certainly true of, or even of souls, but it's certainly true of monads. So the monad kind of sticks around and has a lot to do with it. Now, you remember I said that the monads have one or three focuses, not seven, and some choose to focus more on the development of either creativity and freedom, or more on the development of consciousness and love, as we call it. The last would be the development of intelligent activity. However, that said, the majority of monads throughout the universe, our universe, are along the second kind, the consciousness element. So we call them consciousness beings. Those connected with Earth, though, there's a dominance of third type because Earth right now is a third ray focused planet. So we need more monads that are along the third ray proportionately than other kinds of planets. So that's a kind of a little twist. And also, since all the sub rays of planets below the third ray is inclusive of the third ray, that also puts a big demand on some third ray monads. Now, what does that mean? It just means that that part of existence puts a greater emphasis on the energy side of development of life than the spiritual side during the majority of the time that life is developed on a particular planet and within a particular star system. That's what it means. Not always like that in every star system, not always like that on every planet within a star system. So we can look at this as being, again, diversity. The whole thing is just a huge way of diversely creating life. And if it wasn't for the energy kingdom, or the third part of God's mind, life would be nowhere near as diverse. Oh, a lot of people say, well, there wouldn't be all these struggles. The forces would go way down. There may not even be any forces. Yep, that's true. But no forces, but also that much going on in terms of creativity and a lot less in terms of expressing new kinds of life. So you give up too much to have a little bit, we'll say, easier time of it, or maybe even a lot easier time. Because obviously forces are no fun. But even so that they're no fun, it still is a, we'll say, an important aspect so that life does become much more diverse. Especially at the human level and below, without forces, the development of creative life and the development of, we'll say, more virtuous life slows and eventually can stop. As hard as it is for us to want to accept it and maybe believe it, the forcefulness of life, which comes from the strong element of the energy kingdom, is a great impetus towards not only diversity, but towards many, many new kinds of interactions and new forms, and despite all the forces, a generalized better outcome in the production of new kinds of life that are self-created. If you remove the force, you may remove all that is really critical and necessary to have a rich, diverse system of life. I know folks that say, well, I would like to change that because it's pretty forceful around here and it's not very much fun. Yeah, I got it. Believe me, just very few people that could understand it much more than me at this time. But I think this issue is this, that this system is wonderful, even if it's difficult at times. And Earth is one of the most difficult of all planets to live on. So our perspective is stilted by this unusual level of force that is exhibited throughout most of life here on Earth. It is not like this everywhere. We're not typical. We're atypical. So as much as we choose to be here, and we're certainly doing that, this is a heck of a ride. This is really a tough place. It means that as souls, not as humans, we want to express ourselves in the most diverse and creative ways possible. And it also means that we may have some, we'll say, peculiar ways of wanting to deal with evil and darkness, because Earth is prone towards it. And so we're here maybe to get a better handle on that and do better in that part of existence. And all of this is an amazing, we'll say, grouping of how certain souls choose to be in certain places. All right, so I think I've gone through the general gist of the energy kingdom. And then I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the processes that are involved in each part of the energy kingdom so we can better get the connections. I have dealt mostly with solar angels because they resemble us, at least in a number of ways. When you start talking about my next subject here, it gets into a very difficult, we'll say, topic in which to talk about. Before I do that, let me just tell you a little bit about, I mentioned this last week, and I think those of you who may be familiar with some of the political issues and other things that are happening here in the United States realize that some of our freedoms may have been infringed upon. Gee, I think I've been talking about that for a long time. But on other issues, if you've been following anything recently in the news, if you happen to want to hear more about some of those practical side issues, you might want to listen to a program called Talking Guns. Now, it's a program that people talk about guns on, but they're mostly talking about freedom in why guns, which seem to be unusually dangerous and peculiarly forceful, have a place in the world we presently exist in. And some of the concepts, again, would be the government, even if it's benevolent, which is far from that right now, but let's say we have a really great government, really great police and great everybody, that can't protect people against forceful issues and particularly evil, dark issues in real time. Now all they can do is, you know, take reports, go capture bad guys, maybe put them in jail. But they can't change the outcome. It's for the individual person to defend themselves. And in order to defend yourself, you have to have at least equal, if not superior, but at least equal force at hand when faced with the force of dark people and we'll call it evil. That's the reason that guns and other kinds of weapons are helpful, because you need to have at least something equal to, if not greater than, the bad guys. Or you're going to be in big trouble, because there's not going to be anybody there to help you most of the time in dealing with that. So the concept of self-defense is a huge one. And that's what Talking Guns is about. And the woman who runs the show is called Kate Kruger. And if you want to listen to it on the Internet, you can listen to, I believe it's KKTG radio.com, and you can listen in on that, or you can listen in, if you're in the Phoenix area, to 1100 KPNX Phoenix Radio on Sundays from 12 to 2 p.m. And Kate runs a store that sells guns called Derby Guns with her husband, Jim Kruger, and it's in Scottsdale. And you can also drop in there if you want to. I think the point that I'm making here, and the reason I'm bringing up a specific radio show, is that this gives us another viewpoint than the one where guns are the unfriendly enemy of people. The only way that guns can, I should say, the only way that removal of guns can be of assistance is if you remove all possibility of dark people, dark circumstances, from being facilitated by weapons. And unfortunately, the present system that we have removes 99% of the weapons from the good people and 1% maybe from the bad folks. No matter what you do, that's the case. I'll give you examples. Great Britain, England, got rid of guns decades ago from most people. Okay, got rid of them. They thought. But their crime rate is still very high, and the use of guns in crimes is still fairly high. Not maybe as high as it used to be, but in relationship to the people who have guns, it's ultra high, because it used to be pretty much an equal situation. Now it's virtually 100%. The bad guys got the guns, good guys got nothing. That's the problem. That's why, until we can resolve that system, we're stuck with the present one. And there's another reason to have guns, and that is that governments are far from benevolent, and they try to take power, control people, and take over people. And they do so through nefarious activities, which we're fighting out here in the United States right now. So the ultimate circumstance is that people have to have protection not only from bad people, but from bad government. And you can say, well, how could people fight the government? Well, the government is worried. Just being worried about that is helpful. Even if people wouldn't win. But the fact that they would stand up and fight is probably enough to worry a corrupt government. So I want you to think about all that. And Talking Guns is a kind of show that these kind of subjects are discussed, not only these, but a lot of other things. And even if you don't like guns, it might be interesting to tune in and listen and see what they have to say there. Okay, so we're back to talking about today's show, which is gaining more understanding of the development of life in the energy kingdom. And now we come to the part where it's really what's called the ultimate goal is for each living being to develop an individual level of consciousness that resembles their creator. It's not the same, and it doesn't equal their creator, because the creator is the sum total of all the consciousness of all the beings that have reached these high levels. But still, it's a piece of it, and you get to see that piece, experience that piece, play out in a virtual reality of time-space for the whole universe. Each super being, that's a joined angel super human, connected together as a great monad. So we'll call it each ascended monad, experiences the universe in total, but in a unique way. God experiences all of those unique ways as one, eventually, into itself. And some people claim that God experiences all those ways all the time. That's a possibility, too. That's a little bit complicated and difficult to explain. But at any rate, this process is a unique one because it provides something that no other system that I have ever thought of or tried to fathom or read about or heard about does. And that is, the Creator gives the right and assists in every way possible for those that co-create with it to experience it, God, in not just some, we'll say, random kind of experience, and not in some way where you read about it in a book or you watch it on a screen or you maybe have a couple of experiences to resemble it. No. But where you become one in many of the experiences of the Creator, except for those that involve the totality of all the experiences of all others with the Creator, because that's not possible. The Creator does this for all of existence within the universe, and each being does it for its own time of creation within the universe, which is not the same as the of God experience. The two experiences are not the same, but they resemble each other. And eventually, each ascended monad has the ability to have enough of an experience of God to not, at that point, have to stay in the physical universe anymore. You get an option to go to a higher universe and live out your existence there. Now, you're not going to be a god of your own universe until you get to the highest level. There's seven types of universes. You get to the highest level, and in that universe, that's when you start creating a universe yourself. But still, even though you're not creating your own universe, you experience the creation of these universes by other beings. And your participation in that creation gives you a good background, an amazing one, of what it means to be a god at different levels in different universes. It's a huge experience, and there's no end to it, because eventually gods create infinitely greater and greater universes with no end in sight. It's amazing. It's amazing. And individuality is never lost in the system, as best as I understand it. So the preciousness of life is in the concept of individuality and of self. It also means that you can experience everything and still be unique. And that makes every bit of sense, especially when you see it from the perspective I'm helping to develop it now. So each of us, eventually as an ascended monad, through joining with the beings in the a being in the energy kingdom and the cosmic marriage and all that business, eventually here we will reach a point where we will experience our individuality at the most creative level beyond anything we can imagine, of course, today, and yet we share this with all other beings, including God itself. That is a unique position. It allows for the greatest level of both creativity and consciousness, or love, universal love, to exist together without competition, whether being friction or forces or any of the things that we at our level today think life is. This is a tremendous experience, and it allows for something even more special to happen between us and our Creator, and that is that we, during this ascension period, have many perspectives, many experiences that are identical in perspective with the Creator. Now, identical means that, well, the Creator is still a greater being, right? So how could it be identical? Well, within the experience itself, we do experience an identical. It's just that as it means something to us in a more generalized and greater state, no, we're not going to be at that point. But for the particulars, we can. And that gives us an incredible opportunity to perceive our own Creator from a very, very specific and individual standpoint of that Creator. Talk about knowing your own Creator, so to speak. This is a huge step. And so the ascended monadic state in the cosmic, the completion of the cosmic marriage with the great angel leads to areas of what is called beyond bliss, to omnipresence of oneness with not just God, but with the whole of life. We eventually experience a uniqueness of each individual part of life. And that's the amazing thing, is that as you ascend, you become in experience all of the wondrous things that are beyond our comprehension in numbers and experiences. Just a tremendous number of them, all at the same time. Who could ever even imagine such an experience? It's just truly wonderful. All right, so I hope I've given at least an inkling of what it means to go through this experience with the energy kingdom and to become connected with it. Let's talk about some of the rudimentary parts that many people still have confusion about. Why is there such a thing as involutionary energy? Why does some energy not only not stay at the spiritual plane level or the Buddhic plane level, but it drops all the way to the physical world where we are, and it is just, it doesn't resemble even life. It is part of life, but it doesn't resemble it. It's just, we don't even think of it that way. We call it heat, we call it force, we call it material things, matter, forms, but we don't identify it with it as life. What is there that's so important about this part of the energy kingdom? Because believe it or not, at the present time, it is the most populated part of the energy kingdom. I realize it doesn't have any self. It lacks much of anything. It's elementary type of energies. It is not group conscious. It doesn't try to work together to promote more life. It can inhibit life and destroy life. What's so important about that? Why even have it? Why can't we just skip over, get rid of that stuff? Because that's what makes life so miserable, right? Hey, Well, interesting. What I said earlier in the show about forces being necessary for diversity. If you remove the elementary aspects of energy, the involutionary energy, the energy that as it develops itself, it becomes less and less conscious and more gravitational. If you remove that energy, you remove diversity. Now, this has to do with a thing called quantum physics. I'll try to explain this in a very simple way. It turns out that the parts of involutionary energy that makes things tangible, part of it is gravity, but it also makes chemistry work. It also makes forms develop and there to be solid things and stuff that we call matter, okay? When you make things material, they gain a definiteness that reduces the probabilities of, there being a flux of changes that are uncontrollable and even maybe damaging. So you end up with something that is sort of definite. Gravity is a defining element. Gravity makes things stuck. It also produces matter, because matter is just energy that's stuck together. And it's stuck together because of gravity things, and also because of things that deals with chemistry. Electromagnetic forces is what they're called. So it uses all of these different elements to produce solid stuff. Now, why is solid stuff so important? Why could we just get rid of solid stuff? After all, when you go to the astral world, most solid stuff is pretty much gone. So why was solid stuff so important? Well, this is the point. Because when you go to the astral world, you can almost create anything from creative imagination, and things respond, and the energies respond much more willingly to thought. But in the etheric physical world, where we are right now, things don't do that. They have a definiteness, and their definiteness causes them to resist thought, other than gravity itself, which is a way of energy thinking, and produces a significant change in physics. It shrinks a thing called the quantum constant, and it makes things seem definite. And it prevents thought, for the most part, from changing forms and changing energy into whatever the thought wants it to be. It prevents that from happening. It gives supremacy to the energy kingdom over the spiritual kingdom. Now, why is that such a big deal? Because most people want to become more spiritual. We think that spiritual is good. So why not get rid of the form side? We'll all go live in the astral world and forget about this place. Well, that isn't exactly God's idea, though. You see, if you were to do that, you would eliminate most of the diversity, because the thing that sticks things together, beyond just the thought of the creative imaginational thinking of humans and other life forms, it gives life a new kind of diversity that the form itself is the foundation of. The energy becomes prominent, preeminent even, over the thought of life. God wants this because it gives to God a side of existence that it would be severely lacking if we got rid of this dimension of time and space, the physical one. And we all started out, say, living in the astral world or higher. We would be missing what it takes to create under such extreme forces and resistance to change that form has in the physical world. Now you could say, well, I wouldn't miss that very much because, hey, it's a lot of trouble and it causes death and it's terrible. Well, it's a lot of trouble, but not to a being who wants to have as much diversity in life as possible and give us the maximum amount of experience, regardless of the quote-unquote perceived difficulty that we have. It really makes life much more interesting, but also much more difficult. All right, so the elementary energy is playing a key role. It provides near infinite levels of diversity without having to hold the diversity in place by us thinking about it. And in a strange way, it allows us to think of even new stuff. It allows us to not have to be constantly concerned about keeping everything going just by constantly reimagining it, which happens in some lower parts of the astral world. Instead, we're free to think of amazingly new stuff and to ignore what the elementary energy is doing for us. Yes, it's producing forces, but at the same time, it's saving us from having to constantly recreate all these things. And for others, maybe interfering in that process as well. In a strange way, it inhibits darkness from growing too much, too fast. So it has a lot of good things to it, besides all the difficulties. All right, so elementary energy has a very important role to play. Then how come it eventually becomes demonic, or it moves from only seeking to become greater gravitational force and chemical, electromagnetic energy connections? How come it moves on to become something that improves life? Well, because the eventual development of life in energy is to do that. It's to experience the complete or near complete lack of individual self so it can learn to appreciate the eventual self-development of self that comes from the demonic side of energy. Eventually, all elementary energy crosses over to become demonic. It eventually starts to develop some parts of a self, if not at first a full self, and it becomes more and more readily responsive to the thought of other life. And therefore, it is cooperative and helpful, although not always, with other life. This gives it an important jump, an important place to move and grow in that it wouldn't have if it just stayed in some material elementary form, which over time becomes relatively boring and lacks self. Okay, so now we begin to see, well, there is more to this energy kingdom than what we originally thought, because it is far more, we'll say, important in the development of life and in the development of consciousness. So eventually the demonic energy becomes first group consciousness. It doesn't become individual conscious. It becomes group conscious. It means that it works together as a group with other demonic energies, but without a self, or with very, very small amounts of self. It follows mostly the group soul and the solar angel assisting it and human beings. Now, why human beings? Human beings are actually here to help develop the devonic side of energy. And we call it civilization or invention or many different ways of looking at it, but it's part of using our creative thought to change the various energies around us, to make it, them extensions of our senses and of our ability to move. This is a critical part of human development, and it crosses into the energy kingdom. We are working side by side with the energy kingdom. Too many people think we're destroying the energy kingdom with pollution and, we'll say, toxic relationships. But that's not mostly true. Mostly what humans are doing is we're extending our senses and our ability to interact and move through the lower kingdoms, which we bring into our kingdom as the technological and scientific and material developments within our society, our societies. This is critical. This is the what is meant for human beings to do. And if human beings don't enter into the picture to do this with the energy kingdom, the planet that the energy exists on will eventually die. Humans are necessary, critical, towards the development of life. At a certain point, without them, life will not continue. It will die out. Now, despite the fact that some people say, well, we're killing them. We're doing the destruction. Well, we're doing some. But if you look at it from the standpoint that without us, there's no hope, you got to figure, well, give it a try, because without us, there's no hope. That's the way the system's designed. We're here to do this. We're here to integrate these lower kingdoms into our own, and especially the energy kingdom itself. Now, how do devonic energies respond to this system? Well, when humans are relatively enlightened, devonic energies are very cooperative and helpful. They actually bring joy, and they produce great, beautiful outcomes. However, there's the caveat. When humans abuse, as we have in this world for eons, the lower kingdoms, and misuse them, have no appreciation, no humility. We are not good stewards with any of the energies that we are involved with. The results are the devonic kingdom becomes hostile towards humans. Now, what does that mean? Well, the devonic energies follow the thought that is more virtuous. The more enlightened the thought, the more spiritual the thought, which is enlightened, the more the devonic energies follow with a lack of force. That's their nature. They want to become more enlightened. When they experience selfish humanity, who brings them into humanity's culture and society, but then abuses the energies and uses the energies in ways which are toxic and destructive to life in general, warring and, we'll say, horribly grotesque in the ways that we use it, the results then become that the devonic energies actually deliberately create forces against humans. Now, what do we mean by deliberate? I mean that although they don't have much individual consciousness, as a group, they become hostile to and resistant to human life. When that happens, disease becomes prevalent. Huge amounts of loss of food and all kinds of life-giving substances diminish, and it becomes very difficult to live and stay alive. Plus, people's life expectancies drop precipitously into half, a quarter of what I might have been. So this is a big negative outcome, and it is a result of the devonic part of life becoming resistant. Now, people tell me, well, what about those plant devas? And I read about them in some theosophical way. And what about this and that? Well, most of those are not very friendly to human beings because their experience, more often than not, is negative. So, yes, you can change that if you make your environment beautiful, if you work with the divinic energies, you can improve it. Too many people don't. I mean, even the science of feng shui is a misunderstanding of what it really means to be cooperative with these energies. If you truly are cooperative, then the life energy of qi and prana work with you, with us, to get the devonic group conscious energies, which are still lunar energies. They're not self-conscious, but they are conscious of light. They're conscious of there being beauty or not. Those energies become toxic. They actually produce disease. They produce destruction of the coordination and the, we'll call it the lacking of force or heat in movement within the energies within us and those in our environment surrounding us. Even the weather, this is true of. Even the weather. The things that we think are just random, they're not. Okay, so we have all of this going on. That's an unfortunate consequence in the divine kingdom. What about the elemental side? This is the thing that's so strange about this. The elemental side is almost impervious to what we do. And you might say, well, how come that's the case? I mean, there's the forms and all that stuff. Well, it doesn't concern itself with the things that we think of as being the human qualities of enlightenment and group consciousness. It only concerns itself with one thing, and that's becoming more dense and more gravitational, bigger, more forceful sometimes. So it has a total, we'll say, obliviousness to how badly we may respond to the rest of the energy kingdom, including the divine side. So it's a very, very strange thing. And when we take it in total, it allows us to continue to survive for a while by using more elemental energies than divinic energies. It's just that the beauty in our surroundings goes away, and we live in an ugly place. And the adaptability and usefulness of things becomes compromised. So it's almost impossible to get anything to adapt to the changes in the environment around us when we're into this negative handling of energy. The energy in form may not immediately be destroyed, but it won't adapt. And that eventually leads to diseases and to a loss of, we'll call it meaning in life, because our interactions become more and more stupefied because we can't use the energies in ways that are helpful to intelligent activity. And so that's how it comes back on us. But strangely, the elementary energies do not necessarily react in some consciously negative way the way divinic energies do. People get that confused, I realize, and they think that they do. And they say, oh, well, the chair over there is not going to like me and it's going to do something bad to me or something. It's not. It probably not going to do anything to you. But the divonic energies, that's a whole other story. And, when you look at how the process is, it starts becoming so obvious why we have so many problems. Like human beings have so many problems if they're alive in the physical world on this planet, because we're just messing things up royally and making it very, very difficult for us to, survive in ways that aren't really torturous to ourselves. Okay, so what about the solar parts of the divonic energies? That's the most interesting part about this whole thing. That's where the real battle is taking place on Earth. The solar energies, as you may remember, only exist in the higher mental world and above. There are no lunar energies in the higher mental world, just as there are no solar in the lower mental or below. So you end up with this strange thing that the only energies that have, we'll call it self-consciousness, exist as concepts in the higher mental world and higher. The ones that we predominantly use over and over again and damage are the ones that are part of what are called the third tier energies of form, which are the very lowest petal of energy, solar energies, that help us to understand basic concepts of material things and somewhat basic concepts of feelings and of, we'll call it, abstractions, but nothing with any spiritual content. So you could be a great knower of things, but with no spiritual element to those things, so you don't have really much that you are conscious about. All right, here's the problem. The more we use these lower concepts, the more we damage them, and literally damage them. And they don't work very well. And then it becomes harder and harder for us to use those concepts to think with. And over time, we also damage some of the spiritual concepts that are still more personal, but they are spiritual, from being able to connect with those concepts that are not spiritual, but are part of we'll call it the form world. And when this starts going on, and it does pretty early in life, people lose the ability to think correctly. They think at all sometimes. And there's a significant diminution in the meaning in people's lives. And they become more and more hostile to not only the energies of sorts, but to each other. Hostility in people is generated tremendously as they damage these very basic forms of divonic energies that are solar. Even worse, possibly, than that particular outcome is the further diminution of spiritual thinking in general. And that cuts us off from our souls and leads us into a true dark life of meaninglessness. This is what the tragedy of human experience is when we misuse these solar divonic energies. We wreck their life, so to speak, but it immediately affects, even more so than physical forms do, our own life. We're truly mental beings. Our personality exists in the lower mental world, but it uses these basic concepts right next door in the higher mental world, close to where it exists. And when it can't use those concepts very effectively, and when it becomes prejudiced, as it oftentimes does, and bigoted and restrictive of the self-development of these divine energies, then its own sense of self, the human's own sense of self, diminishes with the solar divas, diminution of self. Just as they're starting to be pushed back to becoming lunar divas, we're losing ourselves at the same time. That's a huge cost. And this is going on all over the place, all the time. So by not paying attention to or even understanding the energy kingdom, human beings are doing havoc on themselves. Now, it's not so much we're polluting the world with all the physical things that so many people seem to think is the important part of existence. We are polluting our spiritual nature and destroying the real meaning in life. And we're hurting a major part of the energy kingdom as well. It slows up the development of consciousness throughout all the kingdoms by what we're doing. We call it egotism and arrogance eventually, but it's something even more pervasive than that. It's the destruction of another kingdom. That's an energy. And we're reducing the quality of the development of even solar angels. We're reducing the quality of our future and making it more difficult for our soul to eventually become liberated. It's a huge problem. It's not like some small thing. And this is the big problem of messing with, we'll say, solar divinic energies. Okay, some people have told me, well, the solar divinic energies, aren't they completely separate from us? How could we really hurt them? Well, they're not separate from us. They exist as a part of our own mind. They are real. And when we misuse them by making false concepts that are not only untruthful, but are arrogant and egotistical, they're destructive to our minds and to their beingness. Wow. Now, most people don't think that way. I realize. They say, oh, well, what's that? You know, who cares about those things, whatever they are. But as you become more spiritually attuned in life, those things start making a difference. They actually do. And before long, people, as they advance in spiritual development, start recognizing that this is part of our responsibility. Just as we have a physical body, we also have a mental body. And the mental body is composed in lower form of lunar devas and in higher form of solar devas. And if we misuse these, and if we don't care about our misuse, it leads to very bad outcomes. On Earth, this is the test right now. Because there, over time, since there has been any civilization created by humanity, there has been this constant battle to effectively destroy the nature of the solar divinic energies that make up our conceptual reality. And that leads to us living more like animals, to not being able to understand or perceive God properly, and to doing terrible things to ourselves, to each other, and to within ourselves, our own solar devas. What we're doing divinically to ourselves, we're doing to others, and what we're doing to others, we're doing divinically in ourselves. It's amazing. And that's exactly what is happening here on Earth. Earth is one of the few planets where this battle is, I mean, in huge, full-out, we'll say, movement happening between people and within people and encouraged by evil. Evil is seeking to win this war in a mental way, not astrally as most people think. Because in the past, that's what it used. But it's in order to win now, its best and most likely way is to win it through solar divinic energies being brutally, we'll say, hurt or damaged, making it almost impossible for people to either see or understand, particularly understand evil, and making them easy targets and victims for evil to take over, be possessed by it, and at the same time to virtually make us defenseless because we completely misunderstand almost our whole existence. We see things virtually upside down, one way or another, from one place to another. Far more mistaken viewpoints and understandings than we could ever possibly have otherwise. Okay, how do you correct this? Because we don't have long, you know, a lot of talk about how we're going to deal with this, because this crux of the solar divinic energies is a big problem. And the best way to, first of all, correct it is to try to be perceptive of our mental senses. We have two different sets of them. We have lower mental senses of our, we'll say, examples of concepts. Each example is usually called a series of thought forms put together. And then we have perception of a concept or of concepts. Generally speaking, the best way to start repairing damage to the solar divinic energies, remember those are the concepts, is to think more and more in spiritual concepts. Each larger spiritual concept we adopt in our thinking remedies hundreds of circumstances of abuse of the concepts that were not spiritual and that have harsh realities of egotism associated with them and or arrogance, which, by the way, destroys the very thing that you get by being more spiritual in your concepts, which is humility. So you gain the humility, and that mends the damage to these beings that are part of us. And it's just like, you know, getting some kind of treatment to repair the damage. You do it by thinking in spiritual concepts, using spiritual ideas and thoughts, and then taking those concepts and putting them into some kind of interaction with others so that you are actually doing something that we call the service. When you complete the process with service, the solar devas are permanently repaired. If you don't complete it with service, it only helps them for a brief time, and they'll fall back into their disrepair unless you do complete it with actual spiritual service. And that's a requirement. There's no way around it. I know a lot of people, oh, well, how can I just think it and not have to do anything about it? No, you can't do that. But a lot of people ask that question. I mean, it's strange that I've heard that asked to me in numerous different ways, but the same question, basically. No, you can't do that. You got to complete it, or else you're just spinning your wheels. All right, now what happens if you use spiritual concepts? Well, as you develop spiritual concepts and you make them part of your interactions more and more, you're then at that point changing the very nature of your of the energies that are part of you, the spiritual, the solar, I should say, divinic energies. And the whole system starts to take on a different nature. It becomes somewhat self-actualized, which means that every time you improve it, it tends to seek to be further improved more and makes it easier for you to do so. Of course, the reverse is obviously true. So if you're a screw-off and you constantly are doing things that are very dark and selfish, we lose consciousness and the divinic energies in the mental body become more and more damaged, and the ability for them to function in any meaningful way is significantly reduced. So it goes two directions, but I would expect with tonight's show, as I'm trying to explain this anyway, the use in interaction with the energy kingdom is not only mandatory eventually, it's extremely beneficial, and there are answers for all the problems that people claim that they think are insolvable. It doesn't matter if it's mental illness or if it's criminality or whatever it may be, people can change, provided they follow the recipe, so to speak, that I'm talking about this evening. There are mental yoga techniques that can be used too, but I don't suggest that that's where people start. The best place to start is by developing humility. That's really the number one thing. The next thing is, after developing humility, is to, again, you've got to take the ideas, the concepts that you have that are spiritual, and put them into action. There needs to be some both astral and physical component that's carried out in terms of activity that causes a change. A change will be some level of increased enlightenment, and the divinic energies will become permanently improved. The mental senses, higher mental senses, will also become equally improved. You'll actually become much more intelligent by not the standard of how many questions can you answer in an IQ test correctly, but by how well you can creatively think. That's a big deal for a lot of people, right? All right, so it's something to consider that is a true benefit with our working within the energy kingdom and within ourselves, basically. Remember, everything that we talk about as energy is really us. It's just a third part of God's mind interactively within us. And it's certainly a part of life. Yes, it has its own life, but it's intimately part of our life, especially in our mental bodies. This is very true. I will tell you this: evil's plan is to destroy humanity here on Earth by increasing egotism, by deception, by limiting as much as possible diversity, and removing freedom and liberty and choices, and creating fake or false senses or explanations, concepts of love. The love that it creates are falsities. Social justice is a falsity. There's many other ones that have to do with, quote, fake love. Real love, of course, is helping others to become more giving and not take. That's real love. All right, so in the process of the, we'll say, involvement with our energy self, the part of us that's energy, we can be tremendously instrumental into changing what's part of our mind. But here's here's the other part of that equation. As we change our mind, it becomes easier for everybody else to think. As we change our minds to more truthful positions and become more humble. One person being humble helps everybody else think. And the divinic energies in those people's bodies will follow the greater thought of the one person who's being humble, even though the people whose body they're in is just as selfish at that moment, they'll still work better if they're around humble people. Just the act of being humble is great. And then if you include the service aspect of 100% being focused on and trying actively to help people to be servers themselves, that's the wonderful ticket. Then you got a true, you got the humility, plus you got the active service, and it's a huge, big deal. And that leads to freeing up the energy kingdom, not just in yourself, but in everybody that you have any contact with. And even some people you may not, because it floats out there. It keeps touching others. Less and less, but it still touches others, even though you may not even know them. You may not have anything to do with them. This is the magic. This is the part that it's esoteric, meaning it's hidden, but it's real. And it's what people oftentimes doubt, partly because there's just not enough of it going on, so people don't believe it's true. But if you really want to test this, you can. You can. Each one of you listening tonight, you can go out and you can increase your humility and you can try to be of greater service to people and then see what the results are in others, even others you don't know of. That's the miraculous part of this process. It actually is beyond pay it forward. It's like it can hugely change a whole world if only a few are consistent in following humility and service and work to enlighten themselves with others, not just to be something spiritual, the opposite in effect, to be self-forgetful and not to be concerned about what a person's getting or not getting, but rather how much are other people being served. And then also noticing that the divinic energies within ourselves and those in others are being improved. You can see the improvement readily. You just got to try it. Don't believe me. Go out and test it and see if I'm right. Because everything I'm talking about obviously can be tested in a person's life. It doesn't take much, really. You can set up all kinds of experiments and you can see whether or not it works. Okay. We'll finish this with the last thing. Is if you're around people who are not following what I just said about the solar divinic energies, the best thing to do is to get away from them. Why is that? Well, if you can't serve them, they can only be destructive to you, and you're better off being of service to someone who you can help. I'm not saying just leave everybody that doesn't, for the moment, want to be responsive. I'm not being that extreme. I'm saying only when it's become obvious that this is not the direction they're going in, don't waste your time or energies with them. They will only hurt you. And there's so many better things you could be doing. So be aware of that. It's a mistake. We all tend to fall into it. Well, I'm going to try to help them. You know, I know they might do better, you know. And you spend so much time and energy in that one aspect that it's a fool's journey. And it's very self-destructive for you. And it doesn't really help the people you're trying to serve because they're not open to it. And there's not much more you can do than that. So there is such a thing as, we'll say, allowing people to be free to destroy themselves if that's what they're going to do, rather than trying to do something that is so heroic but so wasteful that it may not lead to anything other than a needless destruction of the solar Davis in your body and maybe other people's at the same time, subjecting them to, we'll say, needlessly to the selfishness and the mental egotism and arrogance of others. When I'm around people who are basically egotistical or arrogant, my first thought is, see ya. I don't waste much time. Now, once in a while, if I see a glimmer of hope, I will do what I can if there's a glimmer. But a lot of people I meet don't have that glimmer. They don't have much. And so in those situations, I don't continue on. I look for the places where I can make a difference and where it can be of help. Think about that. That's just my own personal way. It may not work for you exactly that way. And I could be wrong about this. So the important thing is to test everything I've said tonight, because there's a lot that I have said. We're out of time. And I hope it has made a difference to understanding the energy kingdom from a totally different viewpoint. I would call it the more inside track of looking at energy and how it is part of life. Hopefully this has opened everybody's minds and hearts to living a more spiritual life. Well, we're out of time for now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.